And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, we're getting down to the money crunch. The president has issued his proposed budget. We have to take a look at it. Maybe we can talk about it next week. The Congress is beginning to have committee meetings on the House budget and the Senate budget. The Senate isn't having meetings because they want to see what the House does. It's not clear that the Republicans can come to an agreement among themselves. They're not bothering to talk to the Democrats. So this is an all Republican activity, and they treat each other like each side is the enemy.
but they'll manage. They'll blame Biden.
Of course, it's Biden's fault. Yeah, no, I take that for granted. I knew that. What do you think about all this? I mean,
well, we've seen what the priorities are, and it's the Republicans. There's only one thing that they won't do is raise taxes on the wealthy,
right?
So that we're in that mode again, and of course, it's the catch 22. You can't make any progress on balancing a budget or reducing the deficit or anything without raising revenues. And they go through the same charade, so to speak, that we're going to grow our way out of this.
And it never happens. Cutting taxes never helps the growth in revenue. Never.
Right. And trickle down, no matter how much it's been discredited. Remember, it didn't work for Ronald Reagan, and it didn't work for George W. Bush. You know, and it didn't work in the first term for Donald Trump.
That's right. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Right.
But they continue to maintain that it does.
Right. So therefore, they cut taxes. The tax cut will be reauthorized, although they claim that it's not a reauthorization, because if they say it's a reauthorization, then they have to account for it as a deficit. And if they don't say it's a reauthorization, then they don't have to account for it as a deficit. It's like it didn't happen. Fantastic. Lovely. If you tried to run your company that way, you'd be bankrupt in about a day and a half.
Yeah. And of course, they were putting all their eggs in the Elon Musk basket.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, his mathematics weren't working either. You know, he was going to save $1 trillion, and it was 500 million, then it was down, and it got down to what, roughly 150 million. And then they found out that because of the way he was cutting things, the 150 million really wasn't saved because he didn't account for the costs of getting rid of things,
which cost 165 million.
Yeah.
So instead of saving money, he spent money.
Yeah.
But now, he did destroy most of the government, at least the part of the government that helps people.
Well, and the part of the government that would control him.
Well, of course.
You know, that thing. And if you noticed in this defense budget, they're one of the great increases in money, or one of the things he made sure is that he gets his money. The Starlink contracts and
the defense budget went up by what, $200 to $300 billion to about $1 trillion.
It's about a trillion.
Yeah, I think that the United States now spends, or will spend, 40% of all money spent on armaments in the world. If you take all the other countries in the world, and the United States is 40%.
Yep.
Phenomenal.
So,
but that is really a wonderful welfare program for the defense industry of the United States.
Yeah, and of course it keeps jobs in certain areas of they've spread it out, so certain congressional districts get it. by the way,
that's true. But the wages that those workers make is as nothing compared to the dividends that the stockholders make.
Right.
That is the most lucrative business in the universe is munitions making, because first of all, there's no risk, because all the research and development is paid for extra by the government.
Yeah, and it always needs to be replenished.
Yeah, that's right.
So you have that. But don't forget, this area gets its fair share with the war in Ukraine. The Scranton Army Defense Plant is one of the two main suppliers there.
That's true. But I mean, but that's the whole point. They put defense plants in as many different places that they could, so that they'd have the House of Representatives voting for these military appropriations constantly. And the argument would be, well, we got jobs in our district, we got to protect them. Find other jobs.
Yeah. Meanwhile, talking about our district, we're still waiting on what's going to happen with Matt Cartwright, whether he's going to run or not for his old seat.
Well, you're the Cartwright guru. What's going to happen?
Well, he was supposed to make a decision by the end of this week, and it didn't happen, but I understand that there are some negotiations going on, so they've extended the discussions for another week and a half. At some point, though, he's going to have to, get in or get out, because you have to raise the money. His opponent is out there raising money. But
there's no Democratic opponent, right?
Right now, there isn't. I'm sure there's a couple people who are looking at it. Everybody from who I've talked to acknowledges that Matt Cartwright would be the strongest candidate on the Democratic ticket.
And for the Democratic Party nationally, it's a key seat.
Yes.
I mean, the Republicans only have four votes, majority. This takes away one from their majority and adds one to the other side.
Yeah. Now, what Cartwright was looking at, even though he lost this time, he got more votes than he's ever gotten. It was just that the Trump being on the ticket brought out about 25,000 new Republican voters, or infrequent Republican voters.
Yeah.
And that's what swamped him. That won't be there in 2026.
Right.
And, we've got Congressman Bresnahan's got some problems going on with Medicaid cuts. And also,
it seems to me he has an insoluble problem. He signed the letter that said he wouldn't vote to cut Medicaid.
Right.
If he continues that, if he votes against the leadership, I would imagine that the hardcore MAGA people in Scranton will oppose him. On the other hand, if he goes along and he cuts the Medicaid, I imagine he'll bring out a lot of people who are infrequent voters to get rid of him. So I don't see that there's a win-win for this guy anywhere.
No, what they're trying to do is massage the message. All right, how's that for a phrase?
That's great. Yeah,
and what you get Speaker Johnson and the Republicans saying, we're going to have everybody who's entitled to Medicaid is going to get it. But what they don't tell you is they're going to change the definition of who's entitled.
Right.
So they're going to knock people off.
Right.
In order to try to solve this, and even with that, we had $880 million that's in the Medicaid, and they still are talking about it getting down to $500 million, which is still a substantial portion that they've knocked off. And, of course, that goes against the pledge of not touching it at all.
Right.
So we have that. And the consequences.
And you got to remember, half the people on Medicaid, almost half, are kids.
Yeah.
They're kids.
They're kids. And you have the rural areas, which are predominantly Republican.
And elderly. The kids nor the elderly are going to be able to get jobs. If they want to have a work requirement, none of them are going to be able to pass.
And then, and this ties in to some extent with the hospital situation in northeastern Pennsylvania, where we have the two private for-profit hospitals in Scranton, Regional and Moses Taylor, that have been on the verge of closing now for quite a while. They're not making any money. And there's been negotiations going on. I understand by one of the big medical systems in Philadelphia and one of the insurance organizations are being looked at to come up with the money, but the private owners doing what private equity does have so hollowed out the hospitals or the buildings that they may require too much repair and upgrading, so that they may have to be abandoned or torn down and have a whole new hospital built.
In other words, the acquiring hospital regards the existing plant as not healthy, not able to be operated safely.
Right. And I've
heard yet this, that's what we got. That's what we have.
And we've heard this from people who've worked at these hospitals now for a while, saying the situation's really bad. One of my doctors, who still does some procedures at the hospital, told me, he said, you just can't believe how bad it's gotten over there in the whole place. And, of course, morale is down and what have you. So,
and if Moses Taylor closes, where do people go to give birth? Where do people go to? I mean, isn't that the hospital that does that in this area? Nobody in Susquehanna County can give birth in Susquehanna County. You got to go down to Scranton. Or if that hospital disappears in Scranton, where the hell are they going to go?
Yeah. I mean, when we were having kids, my wife and I, there were two hospitals in Scranton that had birth rooms, Mercy and CMC. And now it wound up being at Moses, the other hospital, and we'll just have to see how this plays out. But it's
well, the state could always put on the highways. You know, you have these driver centers, visitor centers. You could have birthing centers. Let the PennDOT could have a string of birthing centers along 81.
You just pull into the Hickory Run stop and
give birth.
Have a kid there. Get a coffee at Starbucks and have
right. Right.
That kind of thing. So I mean, we're having that, and then the monies. They're talking about cutting monies in our healthcare system. All along, a lot of that has to do with grants that universities are getting. Harvard, Penn, Columbia, they all do top research for on various diseases, and they're also cutting at the CDC and the National Institute of Health in order to avoid having to tax the millionaires and the billionaires. And so these things are all being tied together, but the Republicans are having a hard time trying to, in the House where these budget bills occur, trying to make all of the things mesh, and they can't. They can't. So we're going to see how long this thing is, goes on. Before we get some sort of a vote.
And I haven't seen any Democrats pointing the finger and trying to expose what these Republicans are doing, except Jasmine Crockett, who's spoken out and talked about the fact that the Republicans are in disarray, that they're afraid to many of the members are afraid to speak up and say what they really believe, and they will vote the way they're told to vote, even though they don't believe it. But I think all the Democrats should be speaking out. They all know it. Why shouldn't all this be public? Why shouldn't the people know it?
You know, I think the problem is it's getting lost in all the fog. You know, Donald Trump is still out there throwing out all these all the crap against the wall. This week it was changing the names of Veterans Day and Memorial Day. And later in the week, he threw out his picture as Pope. And that's what people, you know, get caught up with instead of the reality of things. But there are, look, there are protests. There was another major protest this week on Courthouse Square.
There were protests that same day in many cities.
Yeah, by the way.
It was May Day, May 1st.
Matt Cartwright spoke at that rally.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke at that rally. So, you know, he's keeping himself there. But
well, he's got to make up his mind in the next week, right?
Yeah, week to 10 days.
Let's speculate about this. He's negotiating, presumably, to say to the Democrats, A, I want money to run. You got to give me enough money to run. And B, I want to make sure that if I win, I get my seniority back and I get the assignments that I worked hard to get. I want them back.
Right.
And why is that something that they can't just agree to? And who's the they? I mean, in the past, the they was Nancy Pelosi or whoever the hell was the speaker or the leader.
Well, I think the thing, the holdup is there are other people that want those positions.
Well, there's always people who want position, but isn't that the job of the leader? To structure
to work it out.
To say, yeah, I know you want this and I'd love for you to have it, but we want this guy back. We want that seat. We want the majority.
Right. And that's, you know, that was always Pelosi's view. So just have to, you know, it's not in the hands of us or any of the ordinary voters. It's you know, what leadership is supposed to do.
And what it implies is that there's no leadership. Well, there's a very weak leadership. There's always leadership, but there's a very weak leadership.
Yeah, somebody, you know, this is a problem with the Democratic Party. They never want to offend anybody. And sometimes you have to offend somebody. You know, you have to have the sister soldier moment type of thing. If you remember that. So,
I remember that. But I noticed that Trump had no problem telling Elise Stefanik she couldn't be the UN ambassador. He just, I don't know if he told her or she read about it in the newspaper, but anyway, she didn't get it. And not only didn't she not get it, but who did get it was Waltz, who got it to save his face. Because obviously it's a position of no significance, so they gave it to that guy.
Well, it is significance. You can build something. I mean, Nikki Haley built a following as UN ambassador.
Yeah, but who was Biden's UN ambassador? I bet you don't even know.
Oh, I'm trying to remember.
Exactly. Right. That's the point. Exactly. It's no longer a cabinet position. It doesn't make policy. It's a PR job. Yeah, if you don't do anything, you don't do anything. And Trump wants to withdraw from the UN anyway.
Well, give Trump, yes, some of the props about manipulating people around. You know, he's given people who he trusts more than one post or one assignment. And remember how he handled Don Jr.'s ex-fiance?
Yeah, she's drinking ouzo in Athens.
She's the ambassador to Greece.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
right.
You know,
end of story. Meanwhile, Steve Witkoff, who probably didn't read the Foreign Affairs page ever in his life, is in charge of the American war against the Houthis, the American negotiations with Iran, the American negotiations with Israel about Gaza. What makes him possible, you know, able to do anything? He doesn't know anything about that. But nobody else would do it.
You know, we're not seeing any real progress coming out of what he's been doing on that. But the other person, you know, talk about Steve, is Stephen Miller is jonesing around trying to become the national security advisor.
Do you think Mike he wants that job?
Who knows?
Who knows?
I think that he's the one that's floated his name out there.
Well, in that case, he wants the job. Yeah. Yeah. But would he have as much power as he has now, or would he? Would that be an addition to what he has now?
We don't know.
We don't know.
Because, like I said, people multitask in the Trump administration.
Yeah, it's true.
That's one of the things.
Well, speaking of Stephen Miller, as you know, his guru died this last week. The guy who raised Stephen Miller, met him at the age of 16 and guided him in his career all the way to this year. David Horowitz.
Yep. Who started out on the far left and wound up on the deep right.
That's right.
But his legacy continues. And this is something that I guess historians will have to talk about, because Donald Trump is a legacy hire, so to speak. He's the legacy of Roy Cohn.
Right. That's right.
And so people can have long-lasting or long-standing effects even way after they're gone.
That's right.
I mean, look at the long effect of Leonard Leo, with the Federalist Society.
And he's still doing it.
He's got other things now. But, we're talking one person putting it there. Grover Norquist on tax policy.
Right.
How long he's done that. I was reading this week that Charles Koch is even, who's been one of those, is really been displeased with the way some of the things are happening. You know, he's a libertarian, and he doesn't like all this interference into private areas. But, his influence in the Republican Party seems to have waned.
But you got to say that Musk and the group that he's part of, they come out of what Koch fostered.
Yes. Yeah. Koch created the playbook, so to speak.
Yeah.
And now these folks are funding it.
I mean, Peter Thiel didn't invent what he's spouting.
No.
He got that from Koch.
Right. And, we have Musk, but we had Sheldon Adelson.
Yeah,
doing that and others, the DeVos family, who were against public education, they wound up with an education secretary in their family.
Right.
The Uline family, and there's a whole bunch of families that a lot of people never heard of. I've in the past sided with a book about that by Ann Nelson. I'm trying to remember its title, and Shadow Network about all these where the follow. There's the same old thing. Back to Watergate. Follow the money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Follow the money.
Yeah,
and that's where it's at. So,
and Pennsylvania has its own homegrown people like that. I mean,
yeah.
Pittsburgh, the Mellons, The Mellon family for over 100 years.
Yes. When Richard Mellon Scaife decided to start a newspaper out there, the Tribune Review, he changed the whole politics of that area.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be a solid Democratic area. Now, Pittsburgh still is, but all the surrounding counties, Washington County and those are no longer there. Speaking of Pittsburgh or our Westerners, we have an interesting development with our now senior senator, John Fetterman.
Correct.
Who hails from out in Braddock, who's, It was a feel-good story when he overcame the stroke that he had to defeat Dr. Oz. But now we're hearing reports of turmoil in his offices, staff quitting.
Well, he's had a complete staff turnover.
Yeah, and policy decisions that don't mesh with what the staff feels is right, and then questions about his own personal personality on that. We hear that he isn't taking his medication, that he's become somewhat erratic in certain ways. And
I think the more interesting thing is that he's completely isolated. He doesn't belong to the caucus, the Democratic caucus Zoom group. He doesn't go to caucus meetings. He won't go to briefings. He won't read memos. He has been known to barricade himself in the office, and his staff occasionally doesn't let him see constituents because they're afraid that he'll insult them. This is the mark of a breakdown of personality.
I've had experience with strokes. My mother had actually had two, but the first one was the one, and there was a change of her personality. Now it wasn't as dramatic as we're talking about, but it could.
Well, she wasn't the senator.
She wasn't the senator,
right?
But the people that knew her know that there were some changes. It wasn't the negativity, though, that Fetterman is showing. It was easy to somewhat overlook, but because she had other more obvious changes, she had aphasia, where she couldn't, get the right words out at times. Mm-hmm. But it does, there could be lingering effects. And also there could be medication effects. He might be on the wrong, he might have been on the wrong medication, or the medication he's on may have stopped working, or, as I said, he's not taking all the medication.
Yeah.
And some, those psychotropic medications, if you stop cold turkey, they have other effects. You have to ease off of them.
Well, whatever the reason is, it seems clear that the man that most Democrats thought they had elected is not the man who is actually in office. It seems
to be the case.
He's a very different guy.
And although fortunately they don't have to worry for another four years. What was he elected in 2022?
2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So about that, but I think you're going to start seeing people jockeying.
The point is, how's he going to do the job?
Yeah.
He's there for a reason. And if he can't do the job, why should he be there?
Well,
it's the way the system works. He's there.
Yeah.
But it's a serious problem for Pennsylvania.
He's there because he's there.
There because he's there. Right. Right. Now, of course, if Oz was there, he would be compos mentis and horrible.
Yeah.
So what you could say, I suppose, is that this guy is maybe horrible, but maybe not be compos mentis. It's not his fault, but the effect is the same.
Yeah. And we'll see. Meanwhile, Oz is now in that new position. He's in charge of Medicare.
Right. He can destroy the medical system. Right.
if the money isn't there.
Right. Right.
In the first
place. Well, next week, I'd like to really get into talking about, let's spend some time researching the president's proposed budget, just to see what the implications are for life in our area and for life in America. If they really did this, what would it mean? And we'll also know, because the committees will have met, because Johnson wants to get the vote in the next 4 weeks, the next 3 weeks. So the committees will have met, and we'll have some reports from the committees, if they can have a report. So.
Meanwhile, this week we will be noting the 80th anniversary of the end of the war in Europe, the fall of fascism.
That's right, May 8th. Yeah.
And who knew, 80 years later, we're looking at it here.
Looking at it here. Yeah. How wonderful. Oh. All right. See you next week.
See you next
week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.